I'm Kate Remington here at MAGFest talking with Gareth Coker. Wow, it's great to have a chance to catch up with you.
It's great to be here and great to finally meet you.
Same here. You have, after a long sort of quiet period, which as it turns out wasn't all that quiet, all of a sudden you've got all these amazing releases with Minecraft, ancient Greek mythology and Chinese mythology, Ark Survival, and the Unspoken VR game. So it's been a busy time for you.
It has, and it just turned out that everything kind of converged at the end of the year. Microsoft said that they wanted to release all three soundtracks on the same day, which was December the 21st. And I was like, okay, that's 3 hours of music on the same day. And also in December, The Unspoken came out, which that was another 70 minutes of music that I did for the game. I haven't finished putting together the soundtrack for that yet. Hopefully we'll finish that at the end of January, because there was just too much to do in December. And Ark is a constantly ongoing process, which I think will end this year, but who knows?
It's so great to be able to finally talk with you about something besides Ori, which is fantastic and magical. But the two soundtracks for Minecraft were done in a really, really short span of time.
Right. This Minecraft was like the first thing that happened post-Ori. About a couple of months after Ori came out, I got a message from an audio director at Microsoft, and it literally just said, would you be interested in working on Minecraft? And I was like, well, let me think about that for half a second. And that got the ball rolling pretty quickly. Now, the difference with Minecraft is that the game doesn't really have a narrative, so to speak, of. And what I learned that they were doing these downloadable content packs, which kind of like were a reskinning of the game. It's Minecraft as imagined in Greek mythology or Chinese mythology. So my brief was to produce music that evoked that period of time, and they didn't really want it to have any relation, at least from what I can gather, they didn't want to have any relation to the original Minecraft music by C418. So I was like, okay, well, I've kind of got a clean slate here. The flip side is that whereas on Ori I had several years to work on it, Minecraft Greek mythology started in the middle of June 2015. And then it was finished middle of July 2015. It was about an hour of music.
That's incredible. I mean, it really speaks to what a speedy composer you are, but not just speedy, but there's a lot in there too.
The thing is, like before that, I didn't think I was speedy at all. I was really I was really nervous about, oh, how am I going to get this done? But one of the good things is that because the music is all in a similar style, it's not like I'm required to create different palettes for a different area of the game. It all just had to be sound kind of Greek. So once I got the first track done, then things started getting finished very, very quickly. Basically, for each mythology, they wanted several tracks for the overworld, less tracks for the nether, and then one track for the end, which is the tech, if you get that far. It's like the last area of Minecraft. So it's really just the overworld tracks that took a long time because there's just so many of them, because that's where the player spends the bulk of their time. But once they were done, it was quite easy to get over the finishing line.
Well, what's so interesting about the Greek mythology is that we know so much about Greek music. We know their modes and the instruments, but we really have no idea what it actually sounded like when it was played. So how did you kind of create this Greek sound?
So I did some research onto Greek instruments, and I did my best to like source some and get them played on the soundtrack. The first piece I did actually for Greek mythology was the Song of Seikelos, which is the oldest piece of music ever committed to, it wouldn't have been manuscript at the time. I guess it would have been stone or papyrus or something like that. And that's a really beautiful melody, and it's public domain, which is why I could, because it's about 2,000 years old, maybe older. So I did kind of my own arrangement of that using, it's primarily Greek harp, but because it's Minecraft, like it doesn't need to be an entirely acoustic ensemble. So Greek mythology is a mixture of traditional Greek instruments and some synth, and then some soft strings just to like underpin everything. Minecraft's still a relaxing game, and we don't need to like hit people over the head. So I kind of wanted to like keep that and give it the Greek flavor with the couple of instruments from that period of time.
And you worked with Aerly Brighton, too, who had just the most gorgeous voice.
She has something going on in her vocal cords that you just can't teach. You know, there's technical stuff that you can teach and learn forever, but, you know, some people are just born with something in their vocal cords that makes them sound different to other people. She has so many overtones going on in her voice, even when she's just singing a single note is sustained. She can make a single note sound interesting. And I think one of the signs of a great musician is not what the most difficult piece you can play is, or how fast you can play, or how it's, can you make the simple stuff sound good? I think that's a sign of a good orchestra. Can they make a simple chord sound good for 12 seconds? How can you make that interesting? And Aerly's gift, she can do difficult stuff, but she can make what on paper looks very simple be the most epic or interesting thing ever. I'm just lucky I was able to find her.
Yeah, I mean, she sounds as if you sort of like transposed her from ancient Greece. I mean, she could be like Aphrodite or somebody.
I think she may have done some research into how ancient Greek singers sound, because there are a lot of universities that actually do courses on ancient Greek music and they record videos of performances, and so she may have done a little bit of research into the diction of how Greek music was sung. And I think she did a little bit of research into the phonetics as well. So while she's not Greek herself, she did the best that she could to sound as Greek as possible.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I've heard that she like makes up languages too, so she clearly has a real facility for just all different kinds of dictions and languages. And
oh well, for Ori, the language of Sign, who is the little orb character that follows you around, that's entirely her. So she came up with all of the dialect for Sign. But yeah, she's able to come up with all kinds of weird sounds that sometimes when you listen to them, it's like, well, is that going to work? And then she tries it, and then she's like, oh, that's not going to work, and then she'll just come up with something else completely different. She's very gifted. It's just kind of amazing to me that she's only been doing this for, like, where are we now? We're in 2017. She's basically been doing this for just 3 years.
That's amazing. But that also kind of tangentially makes me wonder what happens when there's, like, the perfect artist that you want for a soundtrack and they're not available because they're booked up for a thing. I mean, is it possible to sort of delay things until you get what you want from it for a particular artist?
That's a tricky question. I think generally what you want is a lot of time to be able to plan things. With Greek Mythology, I got lucky that Eireli was available, partially because at the time she lived like 10 minutes away from me. So, Eireli, can you come over and record? And it's no problem. But for Chinese mythology, I recorded Karen Han, who plays the Erhu. She's played on Kung Fu Panda. She's played on all kinds of amazing films. And I wasn't sure if, you know, she was going to be available. You just have to ask. And you have to ask as early as you possibly can. But actually, originally, I asked Tina, because I know Tina Guo. She plays the Erhu as well. And she was the one who actually recommended me to ask Karen. Because Tina said she was a capable Erhu player, but she said, ask Karen, because she's kind of a legend. So that's what I did. But, you know, if Karen hadn't been available, I would have probably hired Tina. So usually an artist will often give you alternatives if they're not available, because usually they'll answer, I think. If they're not available, you sometimes get alternatives. And honestly, the alternatives are usually really good, too. There's always solutions. And I find, like, the best artists always want to try and help you, even if they can't directly help you.
Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty close-knit community, and it helps everybody, and everybody gets work for this sort of thing, too. So it becomes a great showcase for them.
Yeah, the game, the film, and TV music communities, everyone kind of knows everyone. And it's more like, it's not 6 degrees of separation, it's more like two. Even if you don't know someone who plays a certain instrument that you want, the chances are that person is one phone call away, because there's a lot of work happening, especially in Los Angeles. There's so much different work happening, and there's so many skilled musicians in Los Angeles. There's just, if they're not in LA, they probably don't exist.
I've heard that from a lot of people, because it is such a great mecca for people to come, and especially if you need somebody with ethnic instruments like you used for the Chinese mythology too. I just had one other thought about your Greek mythology soundtrack. Because it seems as though you did portraits of these gods, you know, kind of like Gustav Holst did with the planets. And so was that a great sort of way to generate ideas?
Now you've just reminded me of that. I'm glad you picked up on that, because I'd completely forgotten about that. At the beginning of the process, you're like, oh, how am I going to write all this music? And you kind of just need something to, like, get the ideas flowing. So I was like, well, we're doing Greek mythology, so let's read about Greek mythology. That's the logical place to start. And some of these stories about the gods are absolutely bananas. They're crazy. Like, the things they did to each other are absolutely horrendous. But they were interesting to read about, and I'm like, well, okay, I'm just going to cherry pick, like, the best, the gods that interest me the most. So, you know, the god of farming is like an obvious overworld choice because it's pretty relaxing, and that track is fairly methodical and quite metronomic. Hades, for example, on the other hand, is, you know, that's a very dark piece and it's super ambient, so that went straight into the nether. Hephaestus is god of the forge, so I use a lot of metal sounds. You know, I generally do what I think is the most obvious solution, because it usually is the best one. Poseidon, god of the underworld. Well, let's make it, you know, let's use some soft tonal percussion and make it sound like we're underwater and, like, make everything muffled. So yeah, the gods, once I'd like chosen the gods, that like immediately informed how I was going to compose. Much just like when you have levels in a video game, sometimes you have the ice level or the fire level, and those inform your musical choices too. I think, yeah, once you find a way to like make, at least for me, once you have a way to like make your canvas smaller, it becomes easier to write music, because there's nothing more intimidating than the blank canvas.
Yeah, I've heard that from so many people, that limits, setting limits is like the best fundamental thing they can do to kind of get going.
And right, and with the Chinese and Greek mythology, you know, the Chinese mythology, you're limited already on the scales that you can use and the tonalities that you can use, so that's very helpful. Then I knew we were using a live orchestra, so that's another limitation, and that's probably the most acoustic soundtrack I've ever done. There's very little synth work in that one. Now, contrast that with Ori and the Blind Forest. Literally every piece is a different palette, and that's why it took so long. It's not, people call Ori an orchestral score. It is and it isn't. The orchestra is just another texture in addition to all of the other stuff in the background. If you listen carefully, there is an incredible amount of layers and textures working with the orchestra to what I hope makes Ori sound like what it sounds like. But that takes time, and it takes experimentation, and it takes a lot of throwing out. With the Chinese stuff, partially because I had to write quickly, you know, that limitation of just having the orchestra speeds up so many choices. But when the choices are wide open, that's the designing the palette is what takes me the longest time. I like doing the melodies. That comes to me quite naturally. The orchestration, it's difficult, but it's that's an educational thing. But the palette design, like what sounds am I going to use, that is always what takes me the longest amount of time. Once the palette design is done, then I can move forward and like write really quickly.
Yeah, it must be like laying the foundation for a house. And once you've got that down, you could just build on that. And you mentioned the scales in Chinese music and in your Chinese mythology OST. And there's just something about them. I mean, you hear those scales and I was like, bam, you're in China.
Well, it's interesting because when I was doing it, I was like, well, am I going to get really nerdy and technical on this? Because there is a difference between the Chinese pentatonic scale and the Japanese pentatonic scale. And I was like, no, I'm going to do what Hollywood generally does. I was like, if it sounds Chinese, like, I mean, I'm hiring a couple of Chinese musicians anyway, so we're getting pretty close. But, I did do some research on, you know, Chinese music, and just to make sure that I had the instruments right and just to make sure that the melodies sounded idiomatic. And yeah, once you hear that scales, you are instantly transported to that place. But it's the scales and the combination of instruments and how they are orchestrated. The first track I did was actually number one on the album, and that took me a long time to write because I felt like I was experimenting on the go. I'm listening to this Chinese music and I'm trying to rebuild it. It's almost like a reverse engineering of Chinese folk music. But once the reverse engineering was complete and I knew how it was constructed, then I was able to like finesse the tracks and then move forward.
Thank you.
when you're limited to so few notes in a scale, again, that makes writing a lot easier. And also, pentatonic scale, it lends itself very well to melodic writing, which I love doing. So the way I'm like writing music quickly is I'll write a melody, and then there'll be like a breakdown, and I'm like, well, let's repeat the melody again. Of course, the melody has to be good and has to be satisfying to listen to, but repeat the melody again and make it slightly different. It was good. That was good enough for Mozart. It's probably good enough for me.
Yep. But I was wondering, because one of the things that I noticed in the Chinese mythology is it doesn't sound like textbook ancient Chinese music, because you mixed in a lot of, you know, Western instruments and stuff.
I don't think they wanted something that felt like completely foreign. I think with Minecraft, because so many people are playing it, I think it needs to have an accessibility to it. And I think for the Western audience, at least, and there's something about the orchestra that is accessible, especially when you orchestrate in the filmic style. And their brief was, we want it to sound Chinese, but we also want it to sound epic. If you've seen any of the trailers for Chinese mythology, I mean, they've created some amazing structures. Like if you play that on a big screen, like you, even with the blocks, the reason why Minecraft is so popular is because it has a unique look, and even with the kind of strange blocky look, it has a very unique charm to it. I think if I'd gone like true hardcore Chinese, I would have felt good about myself. Like, yes, I've done some really authentic Chinese music here, but is it the best thing for the game? Maybe not. And that's why we went with the orchestra. Basically, it just added like a real sense of depth. And actually warmth to what can sound like very cold music if you are not used to it. If you've been listening to that all your life, you can find more in it. But if we just, for example, you fire up the game and you just hear like a flute and maybe a plucked instrument, that doesn't really set the tone. But then you fire up the game and what we have is the full orchestra playing the melody with the Chinese instrument playing the melody. I think almost everything is playing the melody in the opening. You're taken there very quickly, and you think, wow, I'm really like somewhere completely different.
And that really speaks to just how immersive games can be in general, because, you know, unlike obviously just, you know, reading a novel or sitting in a theater watching a film, you're really part of the story.
I'm glad you brought up immersion, because it is like my big thing. Like, when you are playing a game and you get to that point where everything around you, I'm making gestures with my hands, but no one's going to see them, but everything around you is blocked out, that's when something truly special is happening. I'm going to use Ori as an example just because I know it back to front. But I've seen people, I don't like people who say, I don't like platformers. I don't like these kinds of games. then you give them the controller, and then they'll play for 3 hours. There's a reason for that. It's because when you're playing a great video game, what happens is the art, the music, the story, and the mechanics. That's the most important part, is the mechanics of the gameplay. They all come together, and they feel like they're one thing. There are dozens of examples of games which have great individual elements, great art, great music, great design. But when true immersion happens in gaming, I feel like it's when all of those elements come together. And that's when you get kind of an almost transcendental experience. It's why people love Journey, because everything comes together in a way that people hadn't really experienced before. And yes, individually, all of those elements are strong, but they are strong. But when they come together as a whole experience, it elevates every single element. And that's very hard to do. Every game, I think, sets out with the intention of doing that, but there's all kinds of weird things, like, and chemistry things that have to happen. It's kind of like cooking. Sometimes you make a dish, you can make exactly the same dish, but why does it taste better on one day than it does on the other? And I think that's the case with gaming. And when I'm writing, obviously I want to write, a really satisfying music track, but I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the person who's going to be playing it, and what are they going to feel at any given point. And I think once you do that, that opens up the doors to, like, an elevated experience happening, basically. I kind of rambled there, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's what we love. Because the whole craft of putting all of these elements together, I think, is what makes games so interesting, because, most of us only see the end product, and we don't get in to see, how the sausage is made, or, what the process is. So I think the more we can find out about it, the better it is. And you also design games, so that must help a lot with your composing.
I mean, I don't design games that much, but with some of the games I've worked on, I've had the opportunity to, like, give feedback on like flow. I think composers are very good at flow and pacing, because I think we're kind of like editors in a way, because we're having to make music that feels satisfying to listen to. And, a film editor, there isn't really the editor role in gaming, but the designer always has to think, like, where are the peaks and valleys in the game when you're playing it? If you have relentless action sequence after relentless action sequence, well, it all starts to become a bit of a blur. You need something to break that up. And so where I came in on Ori in terms of giving feedback, and this is one of the great strengths of the team, actually, is, I was able to give feedback on anything that I wanted, as long as it was well-reasoned. Now, initially you'd be like, well, why would a composer give feedback on some artwork? Or why would a composer give feedback on some story? And it's like, well, ultimately we're all gamers at the end of the day, at least everyone on that team is. And so we kind of know the end experience that we're trying to get to, and we're trying to figure out, like, how can we get the end experience in our heads, like, into the game? Much like for composing, it's a miracle if I can get what's into my head, like, out of the speakers. If that happens, then something miraculous has happened. And that's just what we're trying to do with games as well. Like, we have the intention, but executing the intention is incredibly difficult. So with Ori, we just try to give as much feedback as possible. And at first it's difficult. I got feedback from an artist about a piano part in one of the pieces in Ori, and I'm like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. But on reflection, I was like, well, let's just give it a try. This is going to cost me like 5 minutes of my time. And he was right. Well, I don't know if he was right, but right or wrong, I thought it was better. So I'm glad I tried it. Now, of course, if you end up trying too many things, then you might not get stuff finished. So you kind of have to, know when to draw the line in the sand. But this is how issues got dealt with at Moon Studios. If enough people brought up the same issue, they would get dealt with. And it doesn't matter who brings them up. Now, this doesn't really work in a gigantic company, but I feel like it's something that should at least be strived for, cross-departmental feedback, because, like I said, we're all gamers at the end of the day, and I think most of us are kind of aware about what we're trying to make. Gamers should be making games as much as possible, and they should be playing the games they work on. I just like testing the games that I work on as well. I spend way too much time doing that when I should be writing. But I feel like it's an incredibly important part of my job. If you're working on a film, you're going to sit down with the director multiple times, watching the film back with the director. As a composer, you should, on a game, you should be doing that on the game. I appreciate it takes more time because games are really long, but it's part of the job. So basically suck it up and get playing. So that's something that I'm very passionate about. It's not been historically the case, maybe, that composers play the game a lot. And it's definitely possible that great game scores can be done without playing the game, especially when you have a good audio team implementing the music. But I've always felt that a composer is perhaps missing their chance to do their best possible work if they are not playing the game constantly. And but that requires being given access from the game developer as well. It's much easier to do on a smaller independent team than a big studio game. But it's still something I think every studio should strive for.
Wow, Gareth, that's fascinating. It's been so much fun to talk with you, and I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure.